Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. A coalition of Pacific Northwest tribes just signed an agreement with the federal government to protect and restore salmon populations. The historic $1 billion plan enlists the tribes for a host of environmental programs in the Columbia River Basin. And the Puyallup tribe just won a legal decision to have a dam in their part of the state removed because it harms salmon and other endangered fish. More on two major fish conservation developments right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Part of Michigan's economic development arm is considering a $50 million grant for a proposed copper mine in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Opponents voiced their concerns at a recent board meeting. Interlochen Public Radio's Ellie Katz has more.
The Copperwood Mine would extract copper from a deposit at the edge of Lake Superior and Porcupine Mountain State Park in the western UP. Critics are concerned about environmental risks. Nicole Kiwe Biber is a tribal citizen of the Little Traverse Bay Bands.
It's just a bad strategy to double down on destruction and contamination at this time.
The company, on the other hand, promises 380 new jobs, which proponents say would bring much-needed investment and development to a struggling rural economy. Quentin Messer Jr., head of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, says the board will weigh comments from both sides and other economic considerations.
What's the cost of inaction? What happens to a community if you decide not to invest?
He says there's no specific timeline for a decision. For National Native News, I'm Ellie Katz.
Glacier National Park officials are studying the return of free-roaming bison. The park received nearly $2 million in federal funding to advance projects, including the reintroduction efforts started by the Blackfeet Nation. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
Glacier will study how deer and elk use the park for grazing before bison return to the landscape. The park will also try to estimate herd sizes. That information will help researchers understand the impact of reintroducing bison. The Blackfeet Nation last year released about 24 animals along the border of the park, and the herd is expected to move into Glacier as it grows. The federal funds will also support efforts to inventory cultural resources, such as ancient campsites impacted by climate change. Funding will go toward whitebark pine restoration as well. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The New Mexico Indian Affairs Department on Wednesday announced efforts to address missing and murdered indigenous people in the state. The department is launching a public awareness campaign about MMIP and addressing behavioral health and suicide prevention and highlighting the state's Indigenous Youth Council. Messages will appear on billboards, web, video, radio, and on social media. The Kinship Pledge campaign was created through several years of community health work by the Youth Council. Youth Council member Alicia Corey says the campaign is authentic to Indigenous young people, and she says it's received positive feedback. The campaign includes 56 billboards with an emphasis in cities and locations with large Indigenous populations. The web and digital promos will be featured on screens and available for mobile devices. The Utah Food Bank is expanding in San Juan County and announced this week the opening of two new pantries to support residents on the Navajo Nation. President and CEO Jeanette Bott says the new pantries are intended to help enhance food accessibility, as residents often have to drive places off the Navajo Nation.
While there are a couple of small pantries in the area of San Juan County in different locations, they still weren't big enough or still couldn't be opened every single day. People here will have to drive to Cortez or to Moab. It's not like you can jump in your car and run a couple of blocks and grab a gallon of milk.
Bott adds the pantries learned more about Navajo diet and preferences, while also aiming to increase available fresh, healthy foods. One pantry is expected to open in the next few days, while the other one needs more time to tie up some loose ends. According to Utah Food Bank, San Juan County residents face higher rates of hunger compared with the rest of the state. 17% of residents report food insecurity compared with 10% statewide. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members serve to alleviate poverty while earning money for college and gaining professional skills. Rewarding service opportunities can be found at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA. Lakota-made indigenous first medicines and eco-friendly personal care products are small batch prepared in the Lakota traditions using sustainably harvested natural and organic ingredients, and all can be found at lakotamade.com, who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm your host, Sean Spruce. Tribes in the Pacific Northwest have worked for decades to restore the salmon runs they have always had close traditional connections to. An agreement between the federal government and a coalition of tribes is a major boost in that effort. A half dozen tribes in the Columbia River Basin signed what's being called a historic agreement to protect salmon. It comes with $1 billion in support for a wide range of initiatives, all to benefit salmon restoration. We'll talk with tribal representatives about what might come from this agreement in the weeks and years to come. You can join us, too. Does this momentum give you hope for the future of salmon? We're at 1-800-996-2848. Our phone lines are open now. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Get your calls in. We'll get your comments on the air. Joining us now from Mission, Oregon, is Corrine Sams. She's the chair of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission and also the chair of the Fish and Wildlife Commission for the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. She's Cayuse, Walla Walla, and Kokopa. Good morning, Corrine, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sean. Glad to be here.
In Toppenish, Washington, we have Jeremy Takala. He's a member of the Yakima Nation Tribal Council. Good morning to you as well, Jeremy.
Hey, good morning, Sean, and good morning, everyone.
And in Lapway, Idaho, we're joined by Eric Holt. He's the chairman of the Nez Perce Tribal Fish and Wildlife Commission, and he is Nez Perce, or Nimiipuu, the traditional name we often hear. Hello, Eric, and great to have you as a guest on NAC today instead of just a caller.
Good morning, Sean, and everyone out there. It's a pleasure to be on here and with this panel, and I appreciate the time. And, yes, I'm glad to finally be a part of your panel. So thank you.
You bet. Well, you have all these great calls, and we've been saying for the longest time, we got to get this guy on there and bring him in as a guest and give him more of a platform. So it's wonderful to have you and Jeremy and, of course, Corrine as well. All of you folks have a lot of experience working both as fishers and also with policymakers. So, Corrine, I want to go ahead and begin with you today. And could you please explain the roles of the tribes that are working on this restoration and protection of species in the Columbia Basin?
Absolutely, Sean. So, you know, the Columbia River Basin, which once sustained, you know, close to 20 million salmon and a wide variety of other native fish, has experienced a significant change in the past 150 years, you know, with rapid population growth, development, and construction and operation of dams on the Columbia River and Snake Rivers and their tributaries have had devastating consequences for our once abundant salmon and other native fish, and many salmon runs are currently at a high risk of extinction. And the extensive deterioration has enormous consequences for tribal nations, recreational and commercial fishermen, and all those who call the Pacific Northwest home, you know, including reduced watershed health, vital for our communities and our ecosystems, resiliency, to the current climate change. And so this Columbia Basin Restoration Initiative is our tribes, the Yakima, Umatilla, Nez Perce, and Warm Springs, and the state's collective answer to mitigating and getting our salmon runs back to healthy and abundant levels.
Well, this all sounds really exciting. Give us some details. I mean, how exactly will this restoration and protection project work, and what are you most hopeful for?
Well, you know, working with along with the states of Oregon and Washington, we jointly developed the Columbia Basin Restoration Initiative. It's a science-based, comprehensive, and durable strategy that it incorporates cultural and traditional knowledge to restore salmon and other native populations to healthy and abundant levels. We want to ensure a clean energy future, support local and regional economics and climate resiliency, restore ecosystem function, and really honor long-standing unmet commitments to tribal nations. As you know, the United States government has a trust obligation to tribes because we signed our treaties in 1855 that secured our exclusive right to fish in all of our usual and custom areas in perpetuity. And if there's no fish, then those agreements are broken. And so this is kind of a proposal, and it offers a clear and concise pathway forward after more than 25 years of litigation. And, you know, it's enabled a stay of the litigation, and, you know, we pursue the implementation of this initiative to be supported by the U.S. government commitments that they've made. Also, there was a presidential memorandum from the Biden administration that supports these efforts as a whole of a government, and I think that that's something that we haven't had in several other decades of this work, is having the attention of the federal government and all its agencies working in collaboration and coordination with the tribes. And so, you know, this calls for advancing the centerpiece of, you know, the confirmed federal science of the NOAA report in 2022, which, you know, is essential and critical to rebuilding salmon, you know, that includes breaching the four lower Snake River dams after, of course, we figure out how we can replace those services in those areas to rebuild those stocks, reintroducing, you know, fish into blocked areas in the upper Columbia, improving passage throughout the main stem, improving water quality and quality to be improved in the tributaries for our habitat and passage for mid-Columbia stocks. You know, currently we have 13 ESA-listed salmon and steelhead stocks within the Columbia Basin. So our main goal is to rebuild those stocks.
All right. Corrine, this is really, really exciting to hear this news and all these details. Now, the federal government, this pledge of support along with funding, $1 billion, what exactly will that $1 billion pay for?
Well, a lot of it isn't new money. It's just already existing mitigation funds, you know, from losses that occurred to the tribes in the, you know, operations of the hydro systems. But, you know, we have some main focus goals. So BPA, you know, is committing an additional $100 million for fish and wildlife programs, such as habitat restoration, a $200 million to maintain and modernize hatcheries, which, you know, we've identified have a $1 billion backlog. You know, the United States government will help restore ecosystem function by funding, you know, for example, anole dam removal, analysis on culverts, fist passage improvements, cold water refugia. You know, we'll be working to minimize the rate pressure. You know, there's been some misinformation out there, definitely for ratepayers, for BPA. You know, and the estimated impact is less than, you know, 5% increase in 2026. And so, it's likely far lower and less risky than other outcomes that could have come if we didn't agree on this litigation stay. We're, you know, securing affordable and reliable climate resiliency energy. We're going to work with USG, and they'll be providing the tribes with technical assistance and discretionary funds to support the development at least to 1 to 3 gigawatts of new clean energy resources, which will count towards replacing energy for the Lower Snake River dams. We'll be securing services necessary to replace those services, and working with several agencies within the federal government, and then continue to have stakeholder engagement, you know, as replacing services and sector studies that have to occur and environmental compliance reviews will begin. You know, there'll be a lot of opportunity for additional engagement from the public, stakeholders, and other sovereigns to hopefully help shape this solution.
And Corinne, the waterways that we are talking about today there in the basin, you have the Columbia River, you have the Snake River. Are there any other waterways that are going to be included with these projects?
Well, yeah, because it'll include all of our tributaries in our usual and accustomed areas within the Aboriginal use areas of the four treaty tribes.
All right. And the clean energy you mentioned, I mean, what's the technology there that's going to replace the energy that's created by the dam?
Well, that's the studies that will be initiated. You know, we have to take in consideration, you know, siting as well. You know, we exercise and harvest our first foods in a lot of these areas that will be identified as potential siting places for, you know, solar or wind or whatever viable green energy we feel that will provide the most significant replacement of those hydro systems. And we want to make sure to protect and enhance our first foods. And so we have to be very mindful of where we are creating these new reliable energy resources.
Well, Corinne, really appreciate you kicking off our discussion today. So much information, so many details. You just have it all right there at the tip of your tongue. Really appreciate your expertise. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Corinne and our other guests about this big agreement here between the federal government and a coalition of tribes, and some of it's new information, new funding, and some of it is existing funding from existing mitigation funds. So we'll talk more right after this break, and if you want to give us a call, please do so, 1-800-99-NATIVE. The celebrated movie Killers of the Flower Moon is up for a number of Academy Awards, including 3 for Native American talent. We'll hear from actress Lily Gladstone and traditional singer Scott George about their Oscar nominations on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Archaeology Southwest. Did you know almost all major archaeological sites in the Southwest have been looted or vandalized? Looting and vandalism impact Indigenous people, past, present, and future. Every day, countless Native American cultural items are lost or damaged forever through looting and vandalism. Federal and tribal laws protect archaeological resources. More information about ending archaeological resource crime and how to submit a tip at savehistory.org and on social media at savehistory.
You are listening to Native America Calling, and we're talking about a recent effort to protect and restore salmon in the Pacific Northwest. Is your tribe working to improve fish habitats where you live? Let us know. 1-800-996-2848. That number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Our first guest is online right now, Corinne Sams. And Corinne, let's talk a little bit about the dam. Of course, these dams are a major barrier for salmon, and we, you know, we talk about that a lot on the show and how harmful they can be, not only to the salmon, but just other environmental issues. And the agreement that you're talking about today, it doesn't mention the removal of the dam. Is that something that you're going to negotiate for in the future?
Well, as you know, dam removal, it cannot be decided by a court. That's a congressional act. And you know, I think that we've had a lot of opposition to the Columbia Basin Restoration Initiative and the settlement because of misinformation. or disinformation that opponents have with the Columbia Basin Restoration Initiative. And, you know, we just want to reassure people that, you know, status quo is unacceptable. And we know this is going to affect BPA customers, irrigators, ports, bargers, and the recreational industry. But the fact is that status quo kills fish and it prevents their recovery. So like I said before, you know, with 13 species listed under the Endangered Species Act over the last 30 years and several at, you know, quasi-extinction status, this clearly reflects in the data that we've acquired as well as other federal agencies. And so, you know, the past 30 years of litigation has shown that the hydro systems can't be operated legally under the ESA and NEPA. And as the court overrules each of the biological opinions for the dams that the federal agencies produce, time and time again, the federal court has ruled that the biological opinions illegal and orders of the government to try again. And so meantime, you know, our species are suffering. And so this agreement isn't about dam breaching. You know, it's about the Columbia Basin and restoration as a whole, and this is a component of that. And sometimes the issue of dam kind of sucks all of the oxygen out of the room. But the truth is that the Columbia Basin Restoration Initiative and settlement go far beyond just the Snake River and the dams. And so, you know, we're just consistent in our message that, yes, eventually we all know that the dams have to come down. I mean, not only due to, you know, the decline of fish, but, you know, climate change and having to operate those systems in a different manner to produce the best services it can.
Thanks for that clarification, Corrine. Let's bring Jeremy into our conversation now. Jeremy Takala, member of the Yakima Nation Tribal Council. And Jeremy, tell us more about the Yakima Nation's role in these restoration and protection efforts, and specifically how you folks are increasing broader awareness of the importance of salmon and the salmon habitats.
Well, thank you, Sean, and thank you, Cor and Eric, also for providing many input. I know, again, it's been a long couple of years of working on the Columbia Basin Restoration Initiative here. As Corrine mentioned, you know, working with the four tribes and the states of Washington, Oregon. For Yakima Nation, you know, we, you know, as other tribes, we, you know, consider ourselves co-managers of the fisheries. We have about over 250 employees throughout our Yakima Nation fisheries program, extending up to the Upper Mattel Valley in Washington State, down to the Palouse area, down to along the Clem River and up the Cascade Range. So we have a lot of ongoing fisheries projects. And with the CBRI that has been signed, you know, a couple weeks ago, this is going to really put a lot forth of efforts, you know, into our ongoing work. And like Cor said, you know, not just, you know, we all know we call it a billion-dollar backlog, but, you know, eventually if we were not to have this in place, it eventually increased to $2 billion. And so I think the approach of this, you know, initiative was, you know, somewhat from Congressman Mike Simpson. And, you know, this initiative here kind of took of pieces of that and looking at a different comprehensive plan or approach, if you must say. I know there's been a lot of opposition, you know, in the CBR work. I mean, as Cor said, a lot of folks thought it was a backdoor deal, which wasn't true. I mean, you know, we gave testimony back in January 30th at the House of the Committee on Energy and Commerce. So a lot of explanation was given there, including from the, you know, different agencies that have been, you know, a big support in this initiative here. So for us, though, you know, it's been an ongoing work again. There's still a lot of groundwork to do. A part of that is our approach, which Cor touched on, you know, but more importantly, to empower tribal and state fisheries co-managers, you know, significantly increase funding. you know, we had already had these congressionally approved projects, but, you know, there was never ever congressionally approved funding for these existing projects. So, again, fully fund fishery infrastructure needs. We all know that there's a backlog of authorized and recommended, but historically, for decades, it's been underfunded, and, you know, actions is necessary for safe and effective operations of critical fisheries infrastructure assets and programs. And then, of course, you know, the discussion of lower SNCC restoration and continuity of services. So, you know, again, while this work is on the ground going, you know, there still needs to be consistent with, you know, the NOAA report that we have to look at some of the replacement services, you know, down the right now, you know, and to secure some of these replacements, you know, with the lower SNCC River Dam removal. So, of course, to identify a feasible approach for the Upper Columbia reintroduction, we want to make sure that we ensure accountability to fishery recovery goals, as you keep mentioning, healthy and abundant levels. And more importantly, establish a long-term biological performance monitoring and reporting program to measure progress and support accountability towards the quantitative recovery and abundant goals identified in the phase two reports. And then, of course, when it comes to working with our partners, you know, federal agencies, you know, to coordinate to use their funds and authorities with maximum effect to prevent salmon extinction and restore healthy and abundant Columbia Basin fisheries. So by that being said, you know, to basically use all funding tools to implement the elements of a comprehensive approach.
Okay.
I think all in all, our goal is to, you know, increase our fisheries to healthy and abundant levels, and most importantly to the region here.
Well, let's talk about that and what that means, a healthier salmon presence, and what that will mean for the Yakima Nation and its members.
Well, we're sitting about just over 11,000 members here. We have, you know, many ceremonial homes, longhouses, different churches, you know, that utilize salmon as our first foods, many different ceremonies. So, you know, currently, you know, at a good year, I think we've reached about 1.2 million in comparison to what Corey mentioned, nearing 20 million historically. So, you know, you take a look at the drastic impact to, you know, all these factors that play into, you know, low fish runs. So, becomes an issue, you know, over the years when we're trying to secure fish for our ceremonies, but not only ceremonies, but even for individual homes, you know, that utilize fish on a daily basis to feed their families.
And what are some of those fishing families telling you? I mean, it sounds like you have both commercial fishing interests as well as recreational ones there within the Yakima Nation. And what are they telling you about this agreement, and what are they most excited about?
Well, I think they're excited about, you know, when we keep mentioning healthy and abundant levels, but also the details of this work. You know, we talk about the drastic changes to basically a system of pools on the main stem Columbia. So we talk about, you know, measures to minimize additional generation decline fish populations. You got predation issues. You know, we got ESA listed species, and even regardless in this initiative, you know, we're still all these different fish species are all considered as a part of this comprehensive strategy. And, you know, as mentioned before, to improve this ecosystem functions of the Columbia River and its tributaries. So all of our fishers, you know, they're out about, they see the different challenges or changes throughout the ecosystem. So, you know, again, we got, you know, sea lions presence down in the lower Columbia River. We got aviary predation. We got invasive species. We got sedimentation management or delta buildup in the main stem. So, you know, these are some things that our fishers observe and, you know, and inquiring or telling, you know, our Fish and Wildlife Committee, like, these things are need to be addressed. And which is why, again, this initiative here more or less kind of covers all of those issues or concerns that we are hearing and seeing.
Well, hearing you describe this, Jeremy, and Corrine too, I mean, this is such a comprehensive plan and there's so many working parts. $1 billion, I mean, it might seem like a hefty sum, but is that going to be enough to carry out all these objectives, or will there need to be future investment?
So No, I would say it's not enough. I mean, I think, you know, on the back end, we still have to be, as the six sovereigns, you know, the four tribes, we will still be going forth, you know, to Congress to look at additional appropriations or legislations, you know, that will require, you know, the support for some of the things that weren't, you know, a part of this initiative. So I think, you know, the Columbia River and Tribal Fish Commission that the four tribes are part of, but also for each respected treaty tribes of the Columbia River that, you know, we still work in unity to, you know, advocate and address appropriations that's needed to enhance our fisheries.
And let's just imagine for a moment that you didn't have this agreement on the table right now. I mean, how dire is the situation with the salmon there? And how big is the risk of you folks just running out of fish if not enough is done?
Well, I think, you know, I'll answer for Yakima. I just feel like, you know, this has been an ongoing thing that, you know, has been not fully appropriated over the decades. I mean, we do have Bonneville Power Administration Fish Accords that's still, you know, on the back end, but, you know, can overall, it hasn't been enough, and, you know, we struggle with some of the partnerships or agreements, if you must say, when it comes to funding certain projects, and, you know, who has that trust obligation? You know, we're talking about historical impacts, not only to our fisheries, but even to folks that have been displaced along the Columbia River, so there's a lot of unmet obligations that, you know, the USG has not fulfilled, and so this is just a big piece, but a huge piece that will, you know, get a lot of work on the ground. But there's still additional work to be done, you know, of course, with the impacts of climate change that is continuously happening every year.
Now, Jeremy, earlier you used the term with regard to the opposition, and there does seem to be considerable opposition among some parties that some folks were thinking this was like some kind of a backdoor deal. I mean, give us a little bit more details. What exactly, these folks that are in opposition to these projects, what are they most concerned about?
Well, I think the biggest concern that I heard out of the Energy and Commerce Committee was this was pretty much a target on dam removal. And I don't know how many times the first panel had reiterated, you know, you had CEQ, you had NOAA, you had DOE, you know, had folks in the room saying this is not all about dam removal. You know, we're not removing dams. You know, this is about a comprehensive approach. You know, although, you know, there has to be a study considered and service replacement that needs to be also considered. So I think the biggest thing for the Energy and Commerce Committee was struggling with is you know, taking a different route or, you know, doing something different. You know, I think that's where Congressman Mike Simpson was coming from, is to do something different. We can't continue to go this same route, or as us tribes say, you know, we can't continue to do business as usual. You know, if we do, you know, we will continually go down that road to see, you know, threatened or pretty much extinction of our salmon and steelhead species.
And these folks that are so concerned or have these worries about it being a dam removal project, now, all of these efforts that are included, these clean energy research efforts, that's not enough to placate their concerns, that there's going to be a whole component here dedicated to providing these clean energy alternatives?
Well, and I think, again, you have folks that are pro-dam. I mean, they're protective of, you know, the hydro systems and pretty much continuously to talk about renewable energy, saying that the hydro systems are renewable. You know, it's the backbone of this region. You know, they're continuously to, you know, build this platform of what the dams provide. But in reality, you know, we know, you know, the lowest Snake River Dam is going to provide a certain amount of power for certain months. You know, we know it's also failing. There's minimal use of it. But I also think, you know, many folks are not open to look at different alternative energy that is responsible energy for the tribes to provide. When we talk about the tribes looking at energy, you know, I know each of the four tribes have their own energy proposals within the areas that, you know, want to be a part of what we're seeing with the Department of Energy. I also think that we clearly weren't looking at the comprehensive approach. I think the Energy and Commerce Committee was thinking or feeling that we were going to raise the ratepayers, you know, power bill, when all in all, those that utilize direct power from BPA, we're only looking at a price increase of no more than $3 a year or 24 cents a month. So, and that doesn't include every ratepayer, and it's just a certain few.
Well, Jeremy, really appreciate all of your insights here. We're going to take another break, and I encourage listeners here, give us a call. Maybe you fish in your community. Maybe you are a recreational fisher, or you're a commercial fisher, or maybe your tribe runs a hatchery or has any other type of waterway restoration projects underway. We'd sure like to hear about them on our show today, and our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That number again, 1-800-996-2848. Or if you don't feel comfortable coming on the air and calling us, you can always comment on our social media handles. We've got Instagram, we've got Facebook, and of course we got our website too, NativeAmericaCalling.com. So please interact with us, tell us what you think. And when we come back, we're going to hear from Eric Holt. He is with the Nez Perce Tribe. He is chairman of the Nez Perce Tribal Fish and Wildlife Commission. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Does your club, institution, or other group need custom branded apparel? A wide variety of t-shirts, hoodies, and much more, all custom printed or embroidered, are available from nativescreenprinting.com, a division of Sky Screen Printing, who support this program. A historical trauma master class taught by Dr. Ruby Gibson and staff provides tuition-free online training to tribal members who are therapists, counselors, social workers, and traditional healers. Enrollment deadline is March 1st at freedomlodge.org, who support this show.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and we're hearing about a big development for tribes working on salmon restoration. Do you see momentum for improving salmon runs or other wildlife habitats where you live? Let us know. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That number again, 1-800-996-2848. Let's hear now from Eric Holt. He's the chairman of the Nez Perce Tribal Fish and Wildlife Commission. And Eric, tell us more about the Nez Perce role in this restoration program. And up to this point, what types of projects you folks have been working on?
Well, thank you, Sean. I appreciate that. And the words of Corrine and Jeremy, you know, we've been working on this for quite some time. And, you know, I guess just to start from the initial beginning of the Columbia Basin Restoration Initiative, it was initially from a court proceeding that the Nez Perce engaged in with the United States to recover ESA-listed Snake River stock. And then it grew from that into this now, the Columbia Basin Restoration Initiative. And, you know, and so I think from the foundation of it begins with treaty rights and with ESA native species listed stocks as they are, you know, basically on a trajectory to extinction. And we knew that standing idle and status quo, as stated before, wasn't, you know, thing that we couldn't stand by anymore. And we call it, you know, looking at it through the eyes of the salmon. And, you know, with that, you know, we're on the salmon clock, which is a lifespan of 8 to 10 years of life. You know, and our fisheries program has been doing extensive work and research collecting data, and they've created a document that was titled Quasi-Extinction, and it's basically on stocks of fish that are at critical thresholds of extinction. And, you know, we cannot wait any longer. You know, we provided that data and evidence to show that, you know, these are in dire straits. And one of those examples is the Toucannon River stocks. You know, they're drastically in dire straits, where they've only had maybe 100 to 200 salmon come back. You know, so those are things that are real world impacts that you're seeing right now. And, you know, and I don't think any of us want to see something, you know, go extinct in our lifetime. But those things are happening with all the different pressures and, you know, all the things that are happening with climate change and all that stuff. And, you know, the Nez Perce, you know, we have a lot of the ESA listed species that they're talking about coming to the headwaters of the Snake River, you know, and our tributaries here in the Snake River. And you know, we one of the things that, you know, we initially thought of about this was, you know, our fisheries program is integral in this process with the initiative, because, you know, they're working with production, watershed, and research, identifying projects specific to our specialties within fisheries. And as a matter of fact, our fisheries department team meets tomorrow to develop a more comprehensive list of projects, you know, and with that, you know, our fisheries department produces 12 million fish a year. And with that, $7 million in habitat restoration work goes into that each year. So it's a really big effort on part of the Nez Perce. And, you know, we produce a lot of fish and grow them, you know, for the betterment of all, you know. And so it's not just the Nez Perce that, you know, rely on these. And we understand that. But at the same time, you know, there's a big need for, you know, other funding sources to come available. It's crucial, you know, because in the end, when you look at what the funding sources that have been provided for, and if you break it down by sovereign and about what that amount equals to, it's like 1.6 million additionally a year, you know. And when you look at it for projects on the ground, you know, it does compensate for some, but it doesn't, you know, it's funding sources that, as Corinne said earlier, about, you know, we need additional funding sources and to provide for these, and especially the hatchery infrastructure projects, you know, they're aging structures that, you know, that were put in place to mitigate for those losses of salmon. And, you know, with the Nez Perce, we have the Dorchak National Fish Hatchery and the Clearwater Hatchery, you know, and what we also have the South Fork Salmon River, Looking Glass Creek, Lostean River, the Naha River hatcheries that have infrastructure needs. And, you know, so those are things that, you know, we need to ensure that we're not losing sight of. And, you know, then thinking about Bonneville, you know, they cut their budget by $2 million back in 2018. So that reduced the amount of funding as well, you know, in certain aspects that we, you know, relied upon. So this comprehensive initiative that we're doing with, you know, it's a science-based, comprehensive, and durable strategy that's to restore salmon and other native fish populations to healthy and abundant levels, but also to ensure clean energy future, you know, supporting local and regional economic and climate resiliency, to restore the, you know, ecosystem function, and honor the longstanding unmet commitments to tribal nations. You know, and it's the first of its kind in, you know, the 25 years of litigation, but I always fall back on some of the historical things that have happened to our tribes, and one talking about the Dalles Dam Agreement that inundated Salado Falls. And my grandfather, Lewis B. Holt, was a signatory in 1956 to that agreement. And, you know, the disclaimer clause on that agreement talks about the breaching of the dams even back then, that if that did happen, that they would, the lands would resort back to those original landholders. And those are the natives of that time, you know. And so, you know, even with the understanding of what that agreement was doing, you know, a lot of our leaders of the time, you know, are probably turning over in their grave because they see us fighting the same fight that they did, and still losing out on a lot of the things that they saw. You know.
Mm. Yeah, Eric, this is just really, really complex here, just to hear you describe it. And, I mean, tell us more. I mean, your family has been involved in these efforts. You just mentioned your grandfather back in 1956 being one of the original signatories. And, I mean, why has it just taken so long, do you think, for people to recognize the importance of salmon in relation to some of these other projects we're talking about today, like the hydroelectric dams or maybe logging or some of these other commercial interests?
That's a really good question. Because I think with the Nez Perce, you know, just speaking specifically to us, we have some ongoing issues with, you know, the U.S. Forest Service's comprehensive plan, you know, and the Nez Perce, you know, had a government-to-government with them speaking on some of those issues. And, you know, and it's real, like you said, it's real complex and comprehensive. But, you know, we are engaging with those farmers, those irrigators, and want to ensure that the Bureau of Reclamation, you know, understands, you know, that engagement and then the replacement costs associated with all that, you know, working with, you know, Washington Department of Transportation, you know, all the PUDs and all those that are associated with it, and to make them, you know, understand that, you know, we're not leaving them out of the equation. We want them to be a big part of it so that, you know, they understand the importance of what we're trying to do with this initiative. And, you know, as, you know, when they're engaged, I think they're a little more at ease. And, you know, as you know, we have a lot of opposition to the initiative. But I think that if they're engaged in a part of the process, you know, they feel like they're being heard. And I think that's one of the things that they think they're, you know, with the misinformation or disinformation, you know, strategy that was put out there by some of the senators and representatives, in, you know, in the various states that are against the initiative. You know, one speaking of new Senator Representative Newhouse, you know, we met with him in September, but I remember looking at his desk and on his table there, and he had a, you know, dam removal plaque on his desk. And I remember we all looked at it, and, you know, knew that. Yeah, so we knew going into his office. You know, that having looking at that and then seeing, you know, and hearing some of the rhetoric that comes from his, you know, those individuals that are against the initiative, you know, want to make that standard as well.
Eric, I'm also curious to know some of these outside environmental groups, you know, a lot of nonprofits, grassroots organizations, some of the big national ones. I imagine, you know, they get involved in this and they want to help or support. And what's your thought on those environmental groups? Are they helpful or are they not helpful in all of these efforts that you folks have undertaken?
There is, but also there's some that create roadblocks as well. I mean, I think it's kind of a give and take, you know, and, you know, we don't want to compromise any of our treaty rights and languages within those treaties, you know, with any of these environmental groups or that may want to try to infringe upon them, you know, and some of them are actively engaged with us and trying to help us. And then there's those that, you know, want to protect, I think, their own interests. And therefore, you know, we have to, you know, go to the table and make them understand, you know, first and foremost, the treaty rights and the language within that. And then also the agreements that we've signed into that, you know, whether they're MOAs or MOUs, you know, those sorts of agreements that they understand that we're, you know, we need to make them a part of that and so that they don't feel left out. But at the same time, you know, they need to understand, you know, that, you know, the six sovereigns, you know, that are the stakeholders here that we're talking about. And we want them to understand that we're not, you know, disengaging with them. We want them to be a part of it. And sometimes those groups can, you know, like you said, their interests are their own. And we need to, you know, make sure that we deviate from any sort of misunderstandings as well.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. Let's take a caller now, Yvonne, who is listening on KYUIK in Bethel, Alaska. Good morning, Yvonne. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Good morning to you and all of Alaska. And seems to me the topic is salmon restoration. In order to have that, you have to have fish escapement. Why I say that, me and my people on the Arctic, Yukon, and Kuskokwim rivers, we do our part on that topic, on restoration. We're always on restrictions. Why I say that, our nets are not in the water when the salmon season opens, beginning in June. Only when fishing game opens, we put our nets in for maybe 24 hours. Sometimes it's starting to be 24 hours here on the Kuskokwim River. And on the Yukon, they're using 4-inch. They use 4-inch. That's for whitefish. And the main webbing on king salmon is 8-inch. But now we use 6-inch for that. Why I'm saying this, it is not our, it's not me and my people problem due to the, they put us on restrictions. Why I say that, our nets are not, they're not even in the water. And I say, restoration of salmon needs to happen. You got to have fish escapement. I'm talking
fish
about
escapement.
The Pacific Ocean and the Bering Sea.
All right. I really appreciate that call, sir. Really good information. And let's pivot back to Corina. Corina, could you respond to our caller and maybe provide a little bit more detail here? Fish escapement, what exactly does that mean? And how can that facilitate this restoration of salmon like our caller describes?
Well, I appreciate our brother from Alaska calling in and definitely agree, you know, with escapement goals. That's one of the main priorities of this action. But I think that this is, you know, a testament to us setting a precedent so we can help others throughout the nation create similar agreements. You know, you have predation issues. You have, you know, hydro system and fish passage issues, as well as ecosystem function and floodplain, water quality. All of those things affect the ability for salmon to come from the ocean back up into the spawning beds. And so recognizing that, you know, with this initiative, that's something that we're, you know, trying to pursue and ensure that those native and natural runs can get back into the gravel and spawn. As far as regulations go, the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission and the four Columbia River tribes, you know, we see that heartache. You know, we have agreements, U.S. v. Oregon, U.S. v. Washington, that, you know, determine how we conserve and how we regulate our fisheries within those states. And sometimes it's frustrating, but once we can get our fish to healthy and abundant levels, that will allow for more access and less regulations on fisheries. So tribes like the gentleman that called in, can truly exercise their rights to harvest in a better manner.
And Corina, our caller reminds me of the fact that, you know, that we just have a lot of folks in our communities that fish either recreational or commercially. And talk about yourself and the advocacy and policy work that you do. Could you do that if you didn't have the experience of being a fisher yourself?
You know, I think it's difficult. Because you got to know the ins and outs of the river and, you know, what we've lost over the years. We have a vast connection to our first foods, and it starts with our creation story. And when Creator stood us up and, you know, animals could still talk and animals gave themselves to us to provide nourishment and clothing and other things. In reciprocity, we, you know, made a commitment to our foods that we would forever speak on their behalf. And that connection, you know, leads us into this work. This work isn't new. These words that Eric and Jeremy and I share are not our own. These are echoes from our ancestors that came before us that have continuously managed these resources and really made it their life's work to protect our first foods. And so it comes from, you know, a sense of place and who we are and what we've been doing since time immemorial.
Well, Corina, I want to thank you for joining our show today, along with Eric Holt and Jeremy Takala. A really, really insightful conversation today on the Columbia Basin Restoration Initiative. Unfortunately, we are now out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up the show. But for those of you that weren't able to call in today, connect with us on social media. Hit us up on Facebook or Instagram, or just go ahead and send us an email at NativeAmericaCalling.com. And I do hope you'll join us tomorrow for a conversation about the Native talent represented at this year's Academy Awards. That's coming right up, right around the corner. So until then, folks, enjoy the rest of your day. I'm Sean Spruce.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
Celebrate National Nutrition Month. Choose healthcare food option for you and your loved ones. Sometimes it can be difficult to make good food choice, but there are some resources that can help. For more information, visit ihs.gov/diabetes NACA or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from Center for Medicare and Medicaid Service.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.